Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters.
Hello, I'm David Yarkin, the CEO of Procurated, and I was reading the other day a really interesting article written by Michael Keating in American City and County, where he interviewed a gentleman named Paul Irby from Deltek about some of the trends in cooperative purchasing. And I thought it might be interesting for people who also read the article to take a deeper dive into it. And so I reached out to Paul, and I'm really thrilled that he agreed to join me for a quick conversation today about some of the interesting topics that came out of the article. So hello, Paul. Thanks for joining me.
Hello. Good to be here.
All right. So thanks again, Paul, for joining us. Let's jump right in. So one of the big trends that we've seen in government procurement has been around the idea of supplier diversity. So to jump into this topic a little bit, would you tell me what you're seeing as it relates to cooperative purchasing and supplier diversity, and whether you think those two goals are mutually exclusive, or whether they're goals that can be consistent with each other?
Okay, well, that's a really good question. I think there's been a lot of discussion about it in the co-op space and among the government purchasing landscape. And part of what they're really facing these challenges of, on the one hand, they want to work with diverse small businesses, and on the other hand, they want reliable results, and they feel like they can get that best with the largest and most experienced, most established competitors in their bidding process, and really going after sort of those market leading companies. But when they do that, they've obviously, it's a good thing when you use a product from a market leading company, but then it tends to not be diverse. And so how do you put the two together? Well, in the co-op space, because they're typically, the large national co-ops are nationwide, they're going to be looking for the big dominant market players that can deliver reliably across the country in any situation with consistent pricing, et cetera. But what the co-op space has sort of come up with as a solution is trying to offer a diversity underneath the sort of majority primes. So if you're a big name, multi-billion dollar prime, what you'll do is you'll create a network of dealerships or installers or locally on the ground who can sort of, might be certified small business, certified women-owned minority, veteran, whatever it is. So that way, if you're a government buyer and you see this big name supplier on the contract, but you also know that they happen to have this diverse network underneath them, you can kind of kill two birds with one stone. And what we heard from one major national co-op is that they're seeing a surge in people asking about this diversity. How can we use the co-ops and still achieve our social goals? And so they're starting to sort of collect this data across the major co-ops, and co-ops like to be sort of that partner with the governments. And so I think where we're going is that before you go about selecting a co-op solution, you may be asking your contact over there, hey, do you have any of your suppliers that have diverse subs or installers under them, so that I can say to my city council or to my county council, we use this particular co-op solution, and they were able to give us sort of access to this more diverse network of businesses that were also sort of helping through the purchasing process. And I think in the future, we're going to go even stronger in this direction. It's just sort of beginning. And then also, if you do happen to be more of a diverse business and you get on to, say, a regional co-op contract or a local co-op contract, once you're on there as the prime, then if a government finds out they can buy your solution directly, then what they can do is just continue to prefer you in the process by going back to the suppliers that they've figured out are meet those criteria. And it's not just disadvantaged business. It's also increasingly in terms of environmental sustainability. I think we're going to see more of that in the future, where it's like, well, is this big national multi-billion dollar prime green enough? Are they sustainable enough? And if not, you know, or if they're just regular, well, do they have a network where the folks they buy from, those materials are sustainable? Or, you know, so I think we're going to see both in the sustainability for environmental reasons, as well as for social, you know, disadvantaged type business situations, that the cooperative purchasing can be seen as a way of achieving both of those. So as a convenient way to buy things, as well as a way to achieve your these social goals.
Fascinating. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think a lot of government procurement professionals, you know, the decade and a half I've been working with them, have looked at cooperative purchasing as really a tool to put contracts in place easier and faster. And it sounds like you're saying there's other value that you can unlock through a cooperative contract.
Yep. But of course, it comes from knowing more about the suppliers. So if you don't have any information about them, all you know is they're selling this particular widget, you know, on the co-op catalog, then you're just going off of a commodity mentality of mindset, as opposed to being a little more strategic with how you use co-ops.
Very good. In the article, you also talk a fair bit about e-procurement systems. And you talk in the article, you said that just in the last 3 years, there were over 500 advertised bids or RFPs to acquire an e-procurement or an ERP system. Which came through the Dell Tech analysis. So switching gears maybe a little bit into the area of technology, what do you think the impact of COVID has been on, you know, the sort of pressure to have greater digitization of the procurement process?
Well, it's kind of interesting. First of all, what COVID did was it chopped off the workforce. And so we found, it's like something like a 6%, over a million workers in the public sector, just from state and local government, not federal, were cut in the first part of 2020. And we know that was happening across the board. It wasn't only in certain areas, although I think in schools, it was a lot more because of the schools closing down. So we knew from our surveys over the last 5 years that procurement staffs already considered themselves to be very lean and hardworking, and often they were reporting they had to stay after work extra hours just to meet their goals. So when you pull more staff away like that, it puts more pressure on how they do things and making sure that it's as efficient as possible. But one of the things we did notice was that there wasn't as high of a sort of a run up or ramp up in buying expensive enterprise level systems during the pandemic, because during a pandemic, that's where you really kind of hunker down and you want to do the things that you know work. You don't want to change your systems too much. But what we did find was in 2020, one of our 10 hotspots in government contracting for that year, was a report that we do every year, was about an increase in consulting for procurement. So they didn't necessarily go out and spend $5 million for a brand new ERP system, or they didn't want to change all their rules for everything that they do, because they were so focused on dealing with the crisis of the time. But what they did do was they shared more information about how to survive through this. What are the ways of doing emergency buying, sole source buying? How do we get the PPE in to meet the needs? And so the demand for regular old-fashioned bid-based buying went down, the number of bids, but then they had to spend time figuring out how to get these things quickly in other ways. And I think because of the short staff situation, it just naturally sort of made them a little more wanting to probably collaborate and talk about how to work with the systems that we have in place and make them work better. So maybe you already have an ERP system, but maybe you weren't really utilizing it quite as well as you could. Maybe there's some tricks of, you know, how to do it. And I think that in my mind, what makes sense is that there was a little bit more emphasis on the collaboration, because they were, we already showed from our hotspots report, they were hiring consultants to come in there and help them talk through these challenges of how to buy things better. So if they were bringing in other folks to help them talk, in my mind, that probably means they were already collaborating more than they usually did. It's a scary time, and they knew there were some risks, and they couldn't fail. Everything was kind of on their shoulder. We're counting on you guys as the procurement folks to really pull this out. And I think in that kind of environment, you really can't afford to just sit on your hands and do things exactly the same way you've done before. You don't necessarily have time to buy brand new multi-million dollar systems, but you can certainly use what you have in the best way. And I think there's probably some sharing of, well, what did you do that worked there and not worked there? And there's probably collaboration. And the other thing is the collaboration, not just within the procurement folks themselves, but also across the lines into the end users and stakeholders. And a lot of times we found a real disconnect there where they don't talk enough, you know, that the end users just want to buy something and they think they know how to do it. And then they just bring in the procurement folks at the very end. What results from that is just that it did not come off in the same productive way that it would have if they would have involved the procurement folks at the beginning, using their best practices and all the things that they use. And the whole strategic sourcing issue of doing things in a more systematic way, it's hard to do that on the buyer side when you're left out and you're just seen as an order taker or, you know, just a control at the last minute just to make sure that, oh, have you crossed your T's, dotted your I's, like a librarian checking out books, you know, well, let me see your pass to check out these books. And I think procurement has evolved from that to a much more of a partnering kind of a place. But I think what COVID did was it forced the issue, because now the end users are like, they're saying, we can't really do this without your expertise. You know, we've got to get a million pieces of eyewear and disinfectant on, you know, in 2 weeks. And, you know, we've heard all these stories and gosh, we got to buy this, but we want to make sure we're doing it in the right way. So will you come alongside us, you know, hold our hands and, you know, use our, we want to use your expertise as the purchasing folks. So I think COVID probably elevated the clout of purchasing a little bit.
I think that's 100% right. I mean, and if you look at, you know, states like Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, where they were literally on the phone every night talking directly to the, you know, manufacturers in China and trying to figure out how to get supplies back in planes that they rented and vehicles and trucks in China that they were paying for. It's not the same as just ordering office supplies the old-fashioned way. So I think you're 100%. And I really do believe that the procurement community that really rallied and was able to get PPE at the darkest hour, they really are heroes for sure. I do want to show our audience who may have missed it, this great article that you participated in that was written by our mutual friend, Michael Keating. The headline of the article was "Replacing cumbersome purchasing processes with digital tools can aid in rating and evaluating cooperative contracts." I thought the title was really, really interesting. And I want to focus for a second on the second half of that headline, which says, you predict in the article that governments are really going to spend a lot of time and energy to rate and evaluate and review cooperative contracts. So why do you think that's the case?
Well, first of all, because cooperative has become more of a mainstream kind of a tool, but it's more than a tool. I think it's really become part of a larger strategy that they're using. And when we think of strategic sourcing, part of it is to kind of create a sourcing process. So it's not willy-nilly. You know, you're doing things in certain planned out, agreed upon ways. And now I believe that's coming to appreciate cooperative purchasing as one part of that. And they're saying that, well, if we use cooperative purchasing in these XYZ ways, then what we're doing is taking off the pressure off of the workloads of the buying folks so that they can spend more time on their larger scale, riskier, multi-year type, the really big, the $1 million, the $1 billion purchases. You can spend more time making sure you get those right if you sort of delegate more of your workload to these more standardized commodity type purchases. Take care of them through the co-ops, but because they're sort of folding them into their normal mode of operation, they can sort of use more principles in how they do it and say, well, in this particular situation, we've had great success with co-ops, in particular these three, and we recommend that you use them for anything from, say, $20,000 to $60,000 in these situations. If you want your truck to be pink, sorry, you can't, you know, you got to go out with a regular bid, but for the most part, you know, and so there's, that's gets back to just elevating the clout of the purchasing folks, that it's just, it's become more of kind of embedded in sort of how they do things, as opposed to this weird, freaky kind of miscellaneous thing that, you know, I think cooperative purchasing originally was sort of fun for the purchasing folks because they could sort of chuck the rule book out the window and say, oh, we don't have to worry about getting sued. We don't have to worry about meeting the competitive rules of our state, you know, for this state law. And a lot of times that's one of the biggest burdens that purchasing folks deal with is can we stay in compliance so that we're above reproach, we won't get sued, we won't get attacked, everyone will be happy with us at the end of the day. It won't come back to, you know, to bite us. And with cooperative purchasing, it's like, well, you bypass all that because you're outsourcing all of that to the co-op and you're trusting that they have done things in compliance with all the state law and they have properly sourced the right industry leading, you know, suppliers that you can count on. But at the same time, you know, just because IBM is on there, that doesn't necessarily mean that particular supplier is perfectly suited to every single kind of little tiny niche you have, right? So it may be that they have all these industry leading ones, but you still have to have a little bit of wisdom about, in some cases, it's better to do a smaller or mid-sized supplier. Maybe they're more scrappy and they have more knowledge about a particular niche in the industry. So even though the big name companies may have overall experience, it may just make more sense in certain situations to go with the midsize. And so there's, I think what we're getting a little more evolved in working cooperative purchasing into the larger scheme, which works out well for everyone, but it's really tough for governments to get started on kind of creating these ways of rating things and tracking and coming up with ways to sort of determine whether a deal is right or not. And, you know, my sense was going into the article that there are not a lot of governments that actually have some kind of a actual rating system that they're doing, but they're sort of playing along the edges of this. Like, you know, some of the e-procurement systems have ways of quickly pulling up the names of suppliers. So you could say, well, in the last 10 years, here are the suppliers that that we've worked with, you know, we contracted, and you can see kind of the dates and how much money was spent and everything, but not necessarily at the level of, you know, holding your hand and helping you make a good decision. And I know you've been talking with a lot of the governments and what you do, but is that kind of your perception of it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think, yes, you could look and see, you know, which suppliers had the most spend on a certain contract. And that would tell you, you know, that they've been successful in selling it. But to your point before, you know, not every supplier on a cooperative contract is the right one for you in a government. And what's interesting is, as we talk to governments and we see what governments are doing, there are some governments now and some cooperatives now that are really taking this idea of rating the suppliers to the next level, something that you talked about in your article, this idea of rating the suppliers. And I will give a shout out to the folks in Pennsylvania. So the state of Pennsylvania for years has had a cooperative purchasing program that they call CoStars, where the state procurement office, Department of General Services, creates contracts for use by local governments, local schools, nonprofits in the state. And while we all know, you know, nationally, the names of the really big national cooperatives, what gets lost sometimes is some of these state cooperatives, there's a lot of volume that's going through them. The CoStars program alone does more than $1 billion a year in transactions through it. And what the CoStars team decided to do was they were interested in exactly what you were talking about in the article, Paul. They were interested in reviewing and rating the suppliers that are on the contracts. And what they did was they opened it up to all the local governments, all the schools, all the nonprofits in the state, and said to them, come to this platform and spend 60 seconds and rate and review the suppliers that are on these cooperative contracts that we established. So it's really sort of almost like neighbor helping neighbor. The city of Philadelphia will review a supplier, and the city of Lancaster will go in the site and read that review, and it helps them decide, is this cooperative contract the right one for me or not? So it's really interesting. And the numbers are really big. It's interesting that last time I looked, there were more than 2,000 suppliers on these CoStars contracts that have been reviewed by more than 3,000 individual government and education employees across the state. So the local governments and schools in Pennsylvania are really rallying around this, and they're doing, I think, a really, really good job of providing feedback to each other and reviewing and rating the suppliers on these cooperative contracts so that everyone can learn from each other. And we here at Procurated are pleased to be the platform and to host all of those conversations between these thousands of government employees in Pennsylvania.
So do you see that as going to be picked up by a few other sort of early adopter states or across the country? I mean, how do you see that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, this idea of rating and reviewing products, companies, employees, employers is something we all do in our personal lives, right? I mean,
right.
I wouldn't go work in a new place without looking at Glassdoor. I wouldn't get into an Uber without seeing the rating of my Uber driver. And I think we in government often will try to do things that we do in our personal lives when it makes sense. So I think this idea of rating suppliers is something that we're already seeing being used, you know, really across the country. And I think as it relates to cooperative purchasing, you're going to see this happen more and more, where buyers are rating their cooperative contracts as a way to, you know, be able to send a message to the supplier that they're happy or they're unhappy, as well as to be able to share insights with their peers across the profession. I just got back last week from the annual NASPO Exchange Conference in Orlando. And when you're there, when you're with the procurement community, you can see with your own eyes and your own ears, you know, how much people in public procurement really do want to help each other. And this is one way that they can do that. So I know we've had a great conversation, Paul. I really enjoyed it. For people listening at home, maybe give them 60 seconds or so on Deltek and what you do there and how they can get a hold of you to learn more.
Sure. Well, Deltek, for those who don't know, is a fairly large software IT company, and they have a broad range of products across sort of ERP accounting type things, as well as GovWin, their division that I'm from, focuses on selling packages of information, database type information to government contractors so they can better stay in touch with all the latest bids and awards and future leads, and just equipping them with contacts and access to all the bids coming out. So that's sort of my niche is sort of providing content to help these vendors and suppliers to better understand the government market. And if you go onto govwin.com or actually Deltek as well, and you can actually do Google searches. So like the the 10 hotspots report. You can just find that on, just do Deltek GovWin, 10 hotspots in government contracting. You know, you can pull up some of my free reports that you can download. And another report I'd recommend is called Top 3 Strategies for Optimizing Your State and Local Government Sales. And that one has a whole section on cooperative purchasing. So if you want to look at like our forecast, and David, you may have seen that some of that data before in some of the presentations. But that one third of that is just all dedicated to here's how to understand and go about the process of competing for a cooperative contract as a vendor and that sort of thing. So I'd encourage you to download. Anything that I do is actually free for public download on our system, govwin.com. And I also do every December, I do an annual forecast looking ahead to the next 2 years. And we actually break down the whole state and local market into 12 industry groups, and we show how how everything's trending with a number of bids per year. And we have a quarterly procurement snapshot report, which is pretty popular. So that's what I do. My name is Paul Irby. My email is paulirby@deltek.com. So thanks for listening.
Very good. Well, thanks, Paul. Thanks for joining it. Looking forward to doing this again. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.